Welcome to Adults Do Disney. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Lawrence.
And we are two Disney nerds talking about doing Disney parks without children. Okay, so what are we talking about?
So this week we're going to have a look at some rides and attractions which you can't find in Disney parks anymore because they have gone never to return.
Yeah, and we might talk about things that we would like to see gone and the things that we would like to replace it.
Yeah. I mean, as we've said before, one of the brilliant things about Disney is that they really don't rest on their laurels. They're constantly turning over new ideas and they're getting rid of older attractions to make way for new ones. And really, nothing is safe. I would never have thought they would get rid of the Great Movie Ride.
Yeah, because that seems like it's a mission statement for Hollywood Studios, doesn't it, really?
It kind of is. It's the only remaining ride left from opening day of that park.
Right.
Everything else is gone. And so when that goes, there will be nothing left from the original vision of that.
That suggests to me that they're changing the direction of Hollywood Studios as a whole.
I think they really are. I think they're getting rid of the sort of behind the magic movie making process theme of that park. Because originally when that park opened, it was a functional studio. They were recording things for the Disney.
Yeah, of course. Maybe they think Universal Studios has got that wrapped up now.
Which they could be right.
So yeah, now they're heading towards more of an immersive experience with Star Wars.
Yeah, because Star Wars Land is coming and also Toy Story Land is coming. And both of those are setting about trying to make it a completely immersive thing. So I think the new rebranding of that park is going to be something along the lines of, this is where you can go to really live inside the Disney films.
But I think mainly what we're going to talk about today is the Paris park, because you remember personally, don't you, some of the rides that are no longer there.
Yeah. And there were some brilliantly weird and eccentric things that did used to be in that park, as well as in some of the other parks.
So when are we talking? Are we talking about when it was Euro Disney?
Well, because there were a few... Yes, so it was only Euro Disney for about a year.
Was it really?
Yeah, in when it first opened in 93, 92.
That must have been a massive rebranding, though. Imagine the amount of things that would have had Euro Disney printed on it. For them to go, let's call it Disneyland Paris instead.
It was a huge rebranding because no one was going. It was a major disaster, really.
Well, the French right weren't happy with it, were they? They called it cultural Chernobyl.
That's pretty extreme, isn't it?
Yeah.
And apparently there was also...
Oh, boy, that's gone a bit far.
That's a bit extreme. Apparently there was also a right-wing magazine in France that said they wished the rebels would burn it to the ground.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty extreme.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've probably cooled off about it now.
I can understand why they might have upset a few farmers, because suddenly there's a new town and a big, massive, great theme park basically invading their farmland.
But it was in the middle of it is in the middle of nowhere, really, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they kind of invented a new town called Marne-la-Vallée.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, obviously, it improves
I think it improves. Yeah, France was rubbish until they put a big American
thing. What did France have going for it before Disneyland Paris?
Bread.
Yeah.
That's all they did. Bread and wine.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it was Euro Disney for only about a year. And actually the trains, the Disneyland Railroad, still said Euro Disney, I think up until very recently. I remember it saying Euro Disney when I was there, and it had definitely changed to Disneyland Paris by the time I went for the first time.
Right, okay. So the main thing that you have massive nostalgia for is Space Mountain, the original Space... I mean, Space Mountain is still there in Paris, but it's changed, isn't it?
It's changed twice now since it first
opened. So what was it the first time you went?
So the first time I went, it was called Space Mountain de la Terre et la Lune, which translates to From the Earth to the Moon, because it was directly based on the Jules Verne story From the Earth to the Moon.
Mm.
Hence why that building, that Space Mountain, looks so different to all the other Space Mountains in different Disney parks, because they really went for a very strong retro-futuristic Victorian sci-fi look to the whole building.
So steampunk, man.
It's completely steampunk.
But predating, obviously, steampunk.
Sort of before steampunk was really a thing.
Mm.
And that's the overriding feel of Discovery Land, which is the Paris equivalent of Tomorrowland. And also, to some extent, Tokyo Disney Sea, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've got this feel as well, this retro-futuristic steampunk thing.
Ah, what, lots of brass?
A lot of brass.
Lots of cogs.
Lots of big rivets and cogs.
It's a really nice look.
It's great,
looks classy.
It does look classy.
Whereas, I have to say, the Tomorrowland kind of area of Florida looks a bit sort of white and shiny, doesn't it?
It looks almost like it was once white and shiny.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks very much like a 1970s vision of the future, which it is.
It is. It's a bit like what planes looked like in the 70s. So it's, right, you know, yeah, pale blues and whites and things like that.
Yeah, lots of mushroom grey.
Yeah, it's dated.
It's very dated. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, brass and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's already dated, so it can't age, really, because it's of a time already.
Mm.
But yeah, but the overall theming of that Space Mountain was stunning. It was great.
The music was very particular.
Yeah,
it
had a very, very evocative score by Steve Bramson, which called to mind the films of the John Williams film scores, particularly. It very much sounded like E.T. and things like that. The big adventure movies of the 1980s were what it reminded me of, things like The Rocketeer.
You can still find that on YouTube, can't you?
Yeah, the music is out there, so do have a look for that if you can.
It is lovely.
It's a really, really good bit of music. Yeah, and the whole thing had this this Jules Verne film, and they paid tribute to the Molière, is that the early filmmaker? The Edwardian.
Oh, with the grinning moon face.
Yeah, so in the sort of 1910s, there was a silent film of From the Earth to the Moon. Yeah, with a grinning moon, and the rocket ship went into the moon's eye. And when you reached the highest point on the inside of the original Space Mountain, that was what you saw. You saw that grinning moon, and the music swelled in this brilliant orchestral way.
So what was the second incarnation of Space Mountain in Paris?
So the second incarnation was called A Space Mountain Mission 2.
Right.
Which was there until very recently, which basically...
Oh, so it's the one I know.
Yeah, you know that. You know Mission 2.
Right.
So Space Mountain Mission 2 had exactly the same track layout, but they have different graphics and a different on-ride soundtrack.
It was realistic galaxy clusters and things like that the roller coaster goes through.
Yeah, so you went through kind of nebulas and stars and asteroid fields and things, but it didn't have the kind of... sort of Victorian, slightly fantastical elements that it used to have. And it sat slightly incongruously in the building, which is still covered in these Victorian elements, including saying things like the Columbiad Cannon on the side, which was the name of the company in Jules Verne's book who built the cannon that fired the projectile
to the moon. So even though it had changed, it had just taken away a couple of elements, really, hadn't it? Rather than adding very much.
Yeah, they changed the trains, they made the ride very slightly smoother, but it was essentially the same ride, but just with a slightly less original theme.
And the music changed.
The music changed, which I was very, very upset
about. So what's the next incarnation?
Well, it's now Hyperspace Mountain.
Right.
So the whole thing is now a Star Wars ride. Except it sits incongruously still in this Jules Verne themed building.
So they won't change the outside or
anything? No, because I think they recognise that that's an iconic landmark of that park.
It is stunning.
It's really nice, but it does look totally weird when you consider that it's a Star Wars ride.
Yeah, so what's the inside look like now then?
Well, so the track layout still is the same. But what they've done now is they've put on an overlay of like TIE fighters and X-Wings and the Death Star.
What about the carriage that you sit in?
I think it's kind of similar. I think you're still essentially on the same ride vehicle, but they keep basically lazily putting another thing on it without changing the whole appearance
of the
thing.
So they're not explaining why you're sitting in like a brass...
No.
A canoe.
Yeah, you sit in a brass canoe that's shot out of a kind of Victorian cannon, and suddenly you're in a galaxy far, far away. It really is quite weird.
Right.
And I love Star Wars. I'm more than happy to have a Star Wars roller coaster, but it does seem odd that they would leave it in the same show building.
Yeah, why can't they keep the Jules Verne stuff, which is brilliantly characterful?
Yeah.
And also, obviously, redolent of France.
Yeah.
And also have just a separate Star Wars thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's because Disney hasn't got the money or the inclination to build a major new Star Wars section
but
onto that park.
They have Star Tours there, don't they?
Yeah, which
next
has...
Next to it is Star Tours.
Yeah, and Star Tours has just become Adventures Continue.
Right.
So Paris now has what they have in Florida, which is the generative thing where your ride experience is different
right,
every
but
time.
But does it still feel... quite old-fashioned.
No, because they've made it feel...
No seatbelts and...
No, they've made it feel exactly like it is in Florida now.
Oh, okay.
So it's now exactly the same.
Oh, I'll kind of miss that.
Well, that was another
style.
One, yeah, because the original Star Tours ride was another thing that was all in this kind of mushroom grey. And it started with this very old safety video with some very 80s-looking families getting on board this thing. Getting on board the ride vehicle and saying no flash photography, no eating and drinking. And it was all sponsored by IBM. And it really looked like it was all coming off a very old videotape. It was really fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I could see why that needed to change.
No.
And that one makes perfect sense. I can see why they want to update that.
Oh, but I quite like, I mean, I've said it in previous podcasts, I quite like the bits of it that are slightly inexplicable.
Mm.
You know, so just like the tiki room or whatever.
Well, the anachronistic elements of it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where they're not trying to explain why it looks like it does or why they haven't remotely updated it. It just is.
Yeah,
I really
yeah.
like that. Right in the middle of a shiny park, you have this strange little...
Well, it's funny because when it's something to do with the Star Wars universe as well, the whole point of the Star Wars universe is that everything is old and rusty and broken and it runs on diesel and nothing quite works properly and everything's in decay. Mm. So it shouldn't look that shiny. And I know the story of Star Tours is that you are stepping on board a commercial vehicle and you are a passenger on a flight to Endor, a scheduled flight like a plane. So I suppose it makes sense for that to look like a shiny departure lounge, but it's still, I don't know. I don't feel particularly aggrieved by the loss of the original Star Tours.
No.
Because you'll miss it. I always have a soft spot for it. But apparently Rex, who used to be your pilot in Star Tours, the little robot, he is now going to be a DJ in the cantina in Galaxy's Edge.
Great.
So he lives on. He's got a job that's less dangerous now.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice if in Paris they did what they're doing in Florida?
That would be great.
With the Star Wars.
They've made a new Galaxy's Edge.
With the Star Wars.
Well, the Disney company has just bought back the Euro Disney PLC company. So basically, when Euro Disney was set up, the agreement that they made with the French government was that the French government would own a larger share of the company than the Walt Disney Company. So for a long time, Disney couldn't really get involved with that part because it didn't really belong to them.
Right.
Whereas over the years, they've now been buying back the shares in that company from the Euro Disney French government.
Right.
Aspect of that. So
now they're the major shareholders.
Yeah. So Disney is now the major shareholder. So they can now finally start to upgrade the park, and because it's started to look a bit tatty over the years.
No, you cannot
have it. You want to put it here? We will control it and make it look as rubbish as possible. So now, finally, they're starting to do things like improving elements like the studio backlot tour.
Right.
Which has been very under the weather for some time. And the Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster now is probably going to become a Spider-Man ride. And they've just done the new Star Tours. And they're just starting to really put some more money into it to make it a bit better.
Goodbye, Aerosmith.
Goodbye, Aerosmith.
Sad.
I don't know if there's any plans to change that in Florida. So we still have Aerosmith for some time.
So what else was there that is no longer there?
Well, one of my favourite attractions, which again, I can sort of see why they got rid of. But I still had a very soft spot for, was an attraction that was in Paris, it was called the Visionarium, and in Anaheim and Florida, it was called the Timekeeper, which was a 360-degree cinema where you followed a pair of animatronic robots who were really there on these screens sort of through time and space to a load of different places. They went on a little bit of an adventure through time.
Did it have
time.
A French theme in
Well, it did,
Paris.
Because what the first thing that they did was they went to Paris at about 1900, met up with Jules Verne and H.G. Wells, who were both there. H.G. Wells was played by Jeremy Irons.
Did they genuinely hang out together, those two?
I imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if they met. They were great sci-fi writers of their time. They probably knew each other. And so Jules Verne is there talking to H.G. Wells, and H.G. Wells turns up in that film, played by Jeremy Irons, with his little time machine model, and goes, "I've brought along a model about how you could travel through time." And Jules Verne goes, "This is impossible, I will believe it when I see it." And then Nine-Eye, who was the little robot that you were going on this journey with, appears on the screen, picks up Jules Verne, takes him through a kind of time wormhole to a load of different locations
in space and time.
Yeah, they leave H.G. Wells behind. They come and get him later, but they kidnap Jules Verne because this is France.
Yeah.
And he goes, I remember he goes under the sea in a deep sea diving thing.
How long did this last?
What, the experience?
Film. Yeah.
It was about 15, 20 minutes maybe.
Yeah. Why do you think they got rid of it?
It's a little obtuse. I suppose it does actually fall a little bit into the edutainment category.
But you loved it as a kid, didn't you? A very young kid.
I loved it, but I could see why some kids maybe wouldn't be that into it.
Oh, but parking your kids for 20 minutes, you think... And also, you know, the adults would love it.
Yeah, yeah. In America, the voice of the time-travelling robot was played by Robin Williams as well.
Right. So what did it turn into?
It became Buzz Lightyear's laser blast.
I mean, that is fun, but it's no H.G. Wells and Jules Verne on an intergalactic adventure, is it?
Yeah, you see, again, it's kind of a little bit of losing sight of what made that park unique, which was the French Victorian element.
Mm. And you don't want everything to get too... I mean, Toy Story obviously is brilliant, but it, by its nature, is very plastic and shiny, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah,
you don't want to give it too much of that feel.
Well, I think it's kind of part of Bob Iger, who's the current Disney CEO. He has this idea that intellectual property is everything. So you build a new attraction in a Disney park, it has to relate to a popular film, which is how come... You
is it
now
mainly
have,
because of merch?
I think to some
elements.
Extent it is, and just it's a bit of an easier sell, isn't it? Which is why you very, very rarely these days get the announcement of a new attraction which is completely unique to the park.
Mm.
Something that is just, you know, an attraction or a ride for the sake of a ride that isn't connected to a film. You know, so you don't get Maelstrom anymore, you get Frozen.
Yeah.
And that's very much Bob Iger's philosophy. And I think it's a little bit of a shame.
Yeah, because I don't see... I know consistency is very important, but on the other hand, a sprinkling of the bizarro, it gives it character.
It does. And it's what we're seeing particularly in that park is this the sort of undoing of the steampunk elements. So you lose the original Space Mountain and you have a Star Wars ride. You lose the weird Visionarium thing and you replace it with Buzz Lightyear's laser blast.
What are they replacing Cinemagique with?
Oh,
that's
I don't
another
know.
Cinema experience that happens in Paris.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's,
to Paris.
It's a comedy film, essentially, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? With some special effects as well, you know, the things coming out of the screen, things
yeah.
going into the screen.
It's great, but
yeah.
I think
it's in an absolutely ginormous cinema, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge show building.
And there's only ever about 30 people in
yeah.
there.
it's
and
a shame.
It looks like it holds about 3,000.
I think possibly that might be the reason you've hit upon why they're getting rid of it. I don't think we know what that's going to become yet, but I think right. we assume because they're getting an injection of Marvel into the Disney Studios park in Paris, it'll probably become some kind of
yeah,
Marvel
of
ride.
Course, yeah, yeah. Okay, so anything else that you're going to miss, or that you miss rather, that used to be there?
Captain EO.
Did you actually like that? So Captain EO was Michael Jackson, wasn't it?
Yeah,
a load of Muppety things.
Yeah, that's another one that I can kind of. I'm not sad to see that go particularly. I'm sadder to see the Visionarium go because the Visionarium. The 360 cinema Jules Verne H.G. Wells thing was so weird.
But then Captain EO, when I went, when I went for the first time was only 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe 4 years ago. And they were saying, oh, sorry, Captain EO isn't on today. So even that near, it didn't leave that early, did it? I mean, sorry, I'm not articulating myself very well. But in the film, wasn't Michael Jackson in his 30s or something?
He looked young. Yeah, it was an 80s film, yeah.
Yeah, and yet, so 20
he's still black.
Years on.
he's still
yeah,
black
yeah.
in the film.
So 20 years on, they were still showing it.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
only just started going off about 5 years ago.
Although, that wasn't there. See, that was originally in one of the American parks. I think it was originally in Epcot in Florida.
Right.
That didn't used to be in Disneyland Paris. Before that, there was a variety of things going on in
there. So when did you see it in Disneyland
So
Paris?
I saw it for the first time in Disneyland Paris about... It must have been the time before we first went.
Okay.
So it was only there... It only got put in maybe about 10 years ago or something
like
that.
That is really weird to put it in when it was shot so long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Michael Jackson has been through quite a few controversies.
I think, actually, they put it in when he died.
Oh!
Because he died in about 2008.
So they actually did it as a tribute to him?
I think they put it into the Paris park as a tribute to him when he died.
Even that's a weird decision.
It's quite a weird decision. Because before that, in the same building, was Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Oh,
With Rick Moranis. Which was one of those 3D cinema things where they squirt you with water and the seats vibrate you know, there's little air jets and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they do a good one with the Muppets.
The Muppets one is much better.
Yeah.
The Muppets one is brilliant and funny. Honey, I Shrunk the Audience was... forgettable.
Okay.
So I really don't miss that either.
Right. So I wonder what's there now then.
Well, now I think they do things like showing a short clip of the latest Disney film.
Right.
Which feels a little bit tacked on.
It does.
It feels like something they do until they put a proper attraction
yeah,
there.
That's a bit shameless promo as well.
A little bit. But I think the last time we were there, there was an excerpt from Ant-Man, the Marvel film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which really does feel tacked on.
So things that used to be in the parks but aren't now that we don't have experience of, yeah. but that I would have liked to have. One of them is called the Extraterrestrial Alien Encounter.
Now that
and that
sounds...
was in Magic Kingdom, wasn't it?
It was. Amazing.
In
it
Florida.
Was in Tomorrowland in Magic Kingdom in Florida.
That sounds so not Magic... Magic Kingdom.
It totally doesn't. So this was Michael Eisner's idea for a really scary Disney attraction. So it was a thing very similar. There's a thing in Alton Towers in the UK that's quite similar, where you're basically sitting around an alien egg in a sort of glass cabinet.
And then it hatches. And
then it hatches.
Oh, no!
Yeah, and then disaster unfolds.
Not like a cute, fuzzy alien either, but we're talking like a xenomorph.
It's very, yeah, it's a kind of H.R. Geiger aliens alien.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, oh, no, it's escaped, it's going to rip your face off.
Yeah, it feels like a much more of a universal thing to do than a Disney thing to
Can
do.
Can you imagine that in the middle of Magic Kingdom, though?
Yeah.
You got Peter Pan's flight on one side, and Little Mermaid the other. And then...
An extraterrestrial.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Well, it opened in 1994, and then it got a major facelift in 95 because Michael Eisner said it wasn't scary enough.
And then when did it leave?
Well, unsurprisingly, it didn't last very long because
Why?
The parents gave it so many complaints that it had to close. And it was replaced by Stitch's Great Escape, which is not surprising, a little bit more family friendly.
Surprisingly kind of tone deaf from Disney there.
It is
a
bit.
You expect them to read the room a bit better.
You do. And I think if there was any park that could have gone in, it could have been maybe Hollywood Studios.
Oh, definitely. That would have fit in Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, it would have fit there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because that's got an older feel.
Yeah, an older... The park itself has an older age feel. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. And also, I doubt the parents would have been quite so vociferous.
If it had been in a more age-appropriate park.
Yeah.
But Magic Kingdom, you really feel, is the one that you take the little kids to.
Yeah. So there was also those Snow White's Scary Adventures.
Yeah, which closed for the same reason.
What, because it was not intense enough?
No, it was too intense.
Too
so
scary.
That opened in 71 when Walt Disney World first opened. And
right.
That... I think it's quite similar. It sounds like it was quite similar to what is the current Snow White ride in Paris, which is quite scary.
Really?
Yeah, well, for a little kid.
Yeah, but anything being in the dark is scary to a little kid,
yeah,
isn't it?
True.
I mean, but calling it her scary adventures,
well,
what is it? Does a huntsman take you into the woods and try and murder you?
Well, I don't know, but that's a mission statement, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but then stupid parents, of course.
It was too scary.
So we have to make it soft and rubbish.
Ugh.
Like all the other dark rides.
Yeah.
No, they're not
so,
rubbish.
Okay,
not rubbish.
So if there was things that you could get rid of, but in that same space you could replace it with something, what would it be?
Well, I have no strong feelings about the Tomorrowland Speedway, which we've spoken about before.
Well, the Mum Jiggler.
The Mum Jiggler, so-called, affectionately by us, for what it does to mums.
Yeah.
When
it
they drive along
them.
In the cars, they jiggle.
Yeah.
But the it takes up a lot of a footprint in both Tomorrowland and in Discoveryland, and it's not very exciting.
So what would you have there?
Well, there's been talk for a long time about a Monsters, Inc., themed roller coaster based on the door hanging factory sequence.
Yeah, perfect.
So this is the sequence in the film where they're trying to find Boo's door to take her home, and they're going through this huge kind of airport security conveyor belt thing with all of the doors of all the children in the world, and Randall is chasing them and they're jumping from door to door, and it would make a brilliant hanging coaster.
Yeah.
You know, similar to the Dragon Challenge at Universal, or even the Mummy ride or something like that.
Not the jiggling mummy.
Not right. The jiggling.
Yeah, no, that'd be perfect.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, so
and that's,
much.
That's been rumoured for a long time, and this still hasn't been confirmed or denied either way, so we may still see that one day.
Cool. I think, I think more roller coasters, the better.
It's never a bad thing, is it?
I mean, we don't want to change it into Six Flags or whatever.
Yeah.
Themed roller coasters, is there anything better? And
no.
I mean, I do like the 3D ones, but I don't think you can beat just a straightforward roller coaster with do it up a bit, but you don't have to do that much. So I was thinking, the Little Mermaid stuff is all subpar.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah.
So are you talking about the Little Mermaid show or the dark
Both.
Ride? Both. So this is the show in Hollywood Studios and the dark ride in Magic Kingdom.
The show makes no sense.
Yeah.
Apparently. Actually, I have to say that that's reported because I didn't even go in there. But
oh, right.
I had heard
okay.
such things about it. Apparently, they chop up the story and glue it back together and it makes no sense and it's just confusing.
Are they just performing the songs? I don't know. It sounded like it.
Yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah. Just no one likes it though.
Right. Okay.
And the Little Mermaid dark ride. Apparently, we've been on it, and I can't even remember it.
So well, the thing is, it's not even that old.
It didn't. It just made no impression on
so
me.
So the Little Mermaid dark ride in Magic Kingdom opened when they opened New Fantasyland, which was only about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2014, why is it so rubbish? It's like they don't chuck enough money at some of the stuff, and they.
Well, it's weird because the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train opened at the same time, and that's great.
Oh yeah, that's really good.
That's a really good little roller coaster. Yeah, but this is what you're saying. You want, because that is an example of a roller coaster which is it's pretty tame, but it's really good fun.
Yeah,
for so, kids and grown-ups.
Yeah, you could totally do that with Little Mermaid. So a dark roller coaster, bit like Crusher's Coaster in Paris,
which is a great ride.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So Crusher's Coaster, the little pods that you sit in, it's four people in each pod.
Yeah, you're in a turtle shell.
Yeah, that's it.
A spinning turtle shell.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a different ride every time because you're spinning. But you could totally do something similar for Little Mermaid.
It's based on the Atlantic Current sequence in Finding Nemo, isn't it? Where they hang out with the turtles and they go on it. So anything in it, basically any Disney film where there's some sequence where they go fast through a swooping up and down environment.
Yeah. I mean, same with Aladdin's carpet ride. I know there's something there at the moment, but it's essentially the Dumbo ride,
isn't
it?
It's the same as the Dumbo.
It's a very gentle, like a tripod thing, isn't it? Arm.
Yeah, it's arms going, it's coming off a central spoke where you have a little thing where you can, a joystick where you can control the height of your vehicle.
You're so good at explaining these. I'm always just like, you know, it's a thing that goes round and it's like not very good. But yeah, so Aladdin's carpet ride, very tame at the moment. But God, a magic carpet ride, turning, swooping.
Yeah.
You know, all that.
It wouldn't even need to be scary either.
A roller coaster through Agrabah. How good would that be?
It'd be good. It'd be really good. And they could even...
Or you know, like the actual song, going throughout the whole world.
Well, you could do...
a magic carpet ride.
You could do a soaring type ride.
I can show you the world.
Yeah, you could call it A Whole New World.
Yeah.
You could call it Aladdin, A Whole New World, and it could be a soaring type ride.
Yeah.
It with the similar technology to the Hogwarts... Forbidden Journey ride at Universal, where you're on a kind of you're sitting on a pew, aren't you, a school desk, and you fly through Hogwarts on an arm, and it uses a mixture of curved IMAX screens and animatronics, right?
Yeah.
So you could do that as an Aladdin ride. So you're on the flying carpet and you fly through Agrabah.
Yeah, you know what? You could even have it in Epcot though.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
Especially
if it's going throughout the whole world, you could somehow rig something up that takes you all around the World Showcase. I don't know how you do that.
Oh wow, that is ambitious.
What can I say?
A roller coaster themed to Aladdin that goes around the entire Seven Seas Lagoon.
Yeah.
All through all of the pavilions.
I can show you the world.
There it is.
Shining, shimmering, splendid.
Great. I think you've cracked that. That's an amazing idea.
Yeah.
Although,
tell me, princess.
What we haven't experienced yet is the Pandora flight of passage or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. What's it called, the run in Pandora? Anyway,
the one where sweeping through the land of Pandora.
The Smurfs, yeah.
Yeah. Big stretchy Smurfs.
Yeah, stretchy Smurfs. Fern Gully with long stretchy Smurfs. That's what Avatar is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember anything about that film.
No.
But apart from the fact that they're looking for a substance called unobtainium, which is the most stupid MacGuffin
Ridiculum.
I've ever heard. But apparently that ride, the new ride where you're on the back of a banshee, is quite extraordinary. And it sounds quite similar to this Aladdin idea.
Apart from mine's better.
Apart from yours is better, of course.
Because it would be going through the real world.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
Pandora is great and everything. but you know, if you had recognisable landmarks, you could be like, you could, you know, have the educational element.
It'd be more exciting,
wouldn't
it?
Look, darling, there's the Taj Mahal as you sweep in.
I can show you the world.
Yeah. When did you last let your heart decide, Lawrence?
Exactly, I don't know.
Right, so other things I think there should be. Three Caballeros talking about Epcot. Which is in the Mexico bit.
Yeah.
So it's in the Aztec pillar.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you replace that with a roller coaster as well? Basically, I just want more roller coasters.
Well,
based on a crumbling Aztec civilization. So a bit like Indiana Jones or something. You could swoop through the Aztec pyramid dodging giant boulders. And How cool would that be?
I mean, you could do that. Or you could also just keep it as a boat ride the way it is, but make something richer and more interesting.
Yeah. Just better.
It would be very easy to make that ride better. The idea that that replaced something is extraordinary to me.
Yeah, I know. What the hell was it before? Just someone slapping you with a wet fish or something.
That's exactly what it was, yeah.
They don't even do that in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and finally, I think, I don't know where you'd put it, but I just want a Mulan ride. Because I really love Mulan. Where is Mulan? Why
Mulan
is she not
represented? Mulan does feel extremely underrepresented in Disney Parks. There was at one point a show, a Mulan-themed show, in the what's the thing called, Videopolis,
right,
in Disneyland Paris, which is the blimp building with a restaurant inside it and a amphitheater. Do you remember that building?
No.
We've eaten in there, so it's like we've got a picture of it in our house.
Yes, of course, an airship. Yes, I do. And they have Star Wars Learn How to Lightsaber.
Learn How to Be a Jedi, yeah. Get a Jedi Training Academy or whatever it's called. Yeah. That there used to be a Mulan show in there, but that was a bit incongruous as well. What's that doing in Discovery Land?
Yeah, no, surrounded by all that steel. And,
yeah,
nonsense. No.
So yeah, you want a Mulan ride.
Yeah.
Maybe in the China Pavilion.
Yeah, and how about a roller coaster?
So more roller coasters is the overriding theme.
I mean, the way that you could justify that, how about this? The Great Wall of China roller coaster. So you go the length of China.
Oh my God. Yeah. Up and down the swoops and twists and turns of the actual wall.
Or Shan Yu's Hawk.
Yeah.
So then you get a good bird's eye view of the fighting going on.
Okay, so you are on the back of Shan Yu's Hawk.
Yeah. So a bit like a really great roller coaster version of Peter Pan's flight.
Yeah, cool. Why not?
That'd be great.
Good.
Anything else that you would like to see?
Well, it's a long and complicated question.
Would you say more roller coasters, or would you say more combo ones like Splash Mountain?
Well, I do love a roller coaster, but I think the thing that I want to see in Disney parks more than other theme parks is combination rides. Mm. So like Splash Mountain, where it's a dark ride and a thrill ride.
Oh, definitely. My roller coasters would incorporate that.
Yeah, and indoor and outdoor. What Disney does best of all is mixing things up and making new combinations.
Pixie dust.
Pixie dust, plussing it.
Yeah.
Plus it. Always plus it. The only other thing that I would have loved to have ridden is the Nautilus ride.
Oh.
The 20,000
so
Leagues Under the Sea.
That used to be an actual submarine trip.
Well, yeah, because when Disneyland in California first opened up, there was an attraction called Submarine Voyage, which went through a number of changes. And then when they opened Florida, they opened a similar ride, except that it was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Submarine Voyage.
Oh, cool.
And so you were actually on, because although they have the very beautiful Nautilus walkthrough exhibit, The Mysteries of the Nautilus in Disneyland Paris, and they have a similar thing in Tokyo DisneySea, I think. This one was a submarine voyage on the Nautilus, and you went through, the coves of Vulcania, Nemo's secret lair and all of that, and it was an actual submarine voyage.
Oh, you know what they could do? You know the subterranean tunnels that are used by the cast members?
Hmm.
What they could do is they could make a portion of that into Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Whoa.
Where you have to fight giant crabs.
Yeah, well, there is a Journey of the Center of the Earth ride in Tokyo DisneySea.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course, that'd make a brilliant roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster.
It would.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we should go and do that.
It'd be like essentially the mine. What's it called?
Big Thunder Mountain.
Big Thunder Mountain. It'd be like that, but just reversed into the earth rather
kind
than
of, yeah.
through.
I think that's pretty much what it is. I think it's basically,
well, not
again.
Reversed. It's not, you know what I mean.
Well, it goes down instead of up.
Yeah. Although most mines go down anyway, don't they?
So essentially, you're saying it's another mine train.
Yeah.
But it is
deeper.
Like that. It is like that. It starts off as a dark ride and it becomes a roller coaster.
Oh, we have to go to Tokyo DisneySea.
Yeah, it looks
right
good.
Now.
It looks really good. Yeah. That would be next on my list, I'd say.
Really?
Well, Shanghai.
Not the Hong Kong one?
Shanghai looks pretty good.
Really? I want the Hong Kong one next.
Well, the only thing with Hong Kong is that it's been there a while and it's quite sort of similar to some of the other ones, where Shanghai is obviously brand new.
Yeah.
The Pirates of the Caribbean in Shanghai looks extraordinary.
Oh.
There's some things, I've watched some videos on YouTube of some things that I genuinely have no idea how they're done. Like the skeleton turning into Davy Jones.
Oh, yeah.
There's what appears to be an animatronic skeleton, which just before your very eyes turns into the Davy Jones animatronic.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it's being projected either.
They've done it.
Yeah, it looks incredible. It looks real. It looks like a solid thing turning into another completely solid thing.
It looks
thing.
Like an act of genuine magic.
Yeah.
I have no idea how they could do that. Maybe if you're in the flesh, you can see it better, but on screens, totally baffling.
You'd think a screen would pick up the flaws more, actually.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Yeah, let's go there.
Let's do that.
ASAP.
Yeah. Okay. Let's stop this recording right now and go to Disney Sea.
And we'll report back later.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So what are we talking about next time?
I don't know. We'll have a think about it.
Well, there's a huge... We could talk about restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about best atmospheric rides. So not talking about thrill rides and roller coasters.
Let's get into atmosphere.
Actually, we could talk, seeing as we just got very excited about Global Disneys, we could talk about Global Disneys.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
The differences between the different brands.
Cool. That will require a certain amount of research, brands, I think.
Yeah, by going there.
Yeah, definitely. First hand.
Anyway,
research.
It could be any of those things.
Cool.
So we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Adults Do Disney podcast. If there's any other things you'd like us to talk about, or if you want to tell us about any of your experiences as a grown-up in the Disney parks, you can email us at adultsdodisney@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook / Adults Do Disney and on Twitter @AdultsDoDisney.